Jacob Decker, thanks for the $9.99. Is there a strategic value to beginning the war during Ramadan? Good question. Also, were the insurgents in the Iraq war Iranian proxies? Well, during Ramadan, yeah, people are hungry and thirsty, right? And they generally, you know, I mean, they're I know having fasted during Ramadan, it's hard.
It's hard.
People are weak. I mean, during war, I would imagine you're allowed to eat and drink. It's an exception, right? Travelers are allowed to eat and drink. People involved in manual labor. There's other exceptions.
Yeah, if you're sick, if you're traveling, you're working in the heat. Yes.
But even in my experience, people who are devout, like in Afghanistan, even manual laborers or construction workers, they still don't do it, right? It's kind of like, I know I have the out, but I don't want to. There's been studies that show that like the Islamic world loses like billions of dollars in productivity, car accidents, mishaps at work during Ramadan. I mean, what do you think of the Ramadan timing?
Yeah, I think that it was done on purpose, at the very least, because the Israelis know that not everybody is going to drop the fast in a time of war. They're going to try to continue to fast because they think it makes them better Muslims. And so, yeah, I mean, it was like the, you know, Arabs attacking Israel on Yom Kippur, for example.
Mm-hmm.
They caught the Israelis by surprise, and
or Washington crossing the Delaware at Christmas Eve.
Exactly. Exactly, because gentlemen don't wage war on Christmas Eve,
as everyone knows. But we're right. we're not really gentlemen. We're Americans. and were the insurgents in the Iraq War Iran proxies?
Were the insurgents in the Iraq War Iran proxies? A lot of them, sure. Yeah, a lot of them were. You know, it's like during the Vietnam War. The bands of Viet Cong were Russian or Chinese proxies.
Mm.
Sure.
Ali's asking, are the Arab countries going to have to worry about bringing in food with the closure of the Strait of Hormuz? Good question. I know that Kuwait has a food supply for a year, but whether about Bahrain or Qatar, any ideas?
That's a good question, man.
Food can come in by air too.
Right. The airports are closed.
We
could helicopter it in from Saudi Arabia, but you can't feed an entire country by helicopter.
No. Well, there was the Berlin airlift, right? I mean.
Yeah, but that was massive. That was like a massive. It took the entire U.S. Army Air Corps.
Have any other countries started to support either side of this war?
Countries are trying hard to stay out for the most part. Spain, for example,
just caved.
They did?
Yeah, they caved because Spain, Trump threatened to cut off all trade with Spain.
Yeah, so, but then the European Commission came out and said that the European Union's founding agreement is that if one country is the subject of a trade attack, it's considered a trade attack on all countries. And so the entire European Union would have to cut off trade with the United States.
Oh, okay. You know what? You're right. So it says here the White House had lied about Spain. CNBC is saying Spain rejects the White House claim that it agreed to cooperate.
Yeah.
It says it will not be vassals. Okay, so I saw the report from the White House. Silly, stupid me. I believed something the White House had to say. God, when am I going to learn? Thanks for the $11.99 British pounds. What would cost France, the UK, or Germany to join the war offensively to strike Iranian soil? How likely is it? Big fan of the show. I think it could happen.
I think it could happen too.
I mean, yeah. That's a good question, though, John. What do you think? What inducement would they need?
God, I don't know. I mean, the world is changing like literally every single day. Alliances are changing. Policies are shifting. It's like impossible to say.
Joseph Campbell, thanks for the $5. Have the reports about Mossad agents trying to sabotage oil refineries in Qatar in Saudi Arabia? How about those? What are your thoughts? Say that one more. This is about there are reports that the Mossad's trying to sabotage Qatari and Saudi.
I totally believe it. I do. I totally believe it. Qatar's a strong U.S. ally, a great and true friend of the United States, but they also support Palestinian human rights. And like, oh, God forbid the Palestinians should have human rights. Remember, the Israelis bombed Qatar. First of all, they killed the Palestinian chief negotiator. And then they threatened to do it again. So they hate that we're close to the Qataris. They hate that we have a military presence there. And they just want to make trouble.
Chris Ferry, thanks for the fiver. What are the odds of a domestic military recall for this war with boots on the ground, similar to the post 9/11 recall of veteran Marines? That ain't zero.
No, we touched on this yesterday. And I think I said that, you know, a week ago it would have been zero. And yesterday I'm calling it 50-50 at this point.
I'm with that. John D. Cockefiller, question for the fillers. Eastern Europe and Russia is my jam. Mideast is over my head. I keep hearing that if we back this or that group, it's best for us. Can you give us a no BS assessment of the players? I just want to do the first part for me, and I want to hear you can do the rest, John. It's not good for us to be involved here at all. Anyway.
No, this is a no-win situation. There is no panacea here. Mm-hmm. You can't just, you know, back one side or back one group or five or 10 groups and expect that everything is going to go well. The Middle East is exceedingly complicated. And when it comes right down to it, everybody hates everybody else. So this is...
That's a t-shirt. Robbie, write that down. I want to have Trent do a t-shirt that says that. Quote John Kiriakou. Hey guys, really enjoying the show. Do you think Israel's growing ties with India are driven by strategic interests? Could India's vast global diaspora benefit Israel in foreign intelligence? John, I love that question.
That's a great question. And the answer is yes. Literally everything Israel does is to the strategic benefit of Israel. They don't do anything for altruistic reasons. The Israelis and the Indians have long had close diplomatic relations. Even though there aren't very many Jews in India, they find themselves in agreement on a lot of major international issues. And so they've had close diplomatic ties, close trade ties, military ties. In fact, you remember one of the major Al-Qaeda / Kashmiri separatist attacks was on specifically Jewish centers in Mumbai, a Jewish synagogue, the Jewish community center, and then hotels where they tried to kill Westerners. So yeah, those ties are close and they're longstanding.
What about the diaspora?
You know, there's no downside to being friendly with a billion Indians. I mean, they're all over the world. And, you know, they're not the wealthiest people in the world as a whole. And so they might be susceptible to recruitment by Mossad if they happen to be in sensitive positions. That extra $500 a month might go a long way in helping them to make ends meet. Why not?
Let's talk about the boat. Right. So this the IRIS Dina went to this joint military exercise sponsored by Modi's government in India. So in other words, it's in the Indian Ocean. That's over. It's on the way home near Sri Lanka when a U.S. submarine torpedoes it. It goes down. A few dozen people were survived, I should say. They weren't rescued by the Americans. The Sri Lankan Coast Guard picked them up.
And most of them were severely burned.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, when you see the video, I mean, it's not surprising. I mean, apparently it's the first torpedo fired by an American vessel since World War II. So speaking of World War II, a lot of people have been pointing out that in some ways we're worse than the Nazis in this respect. Because Nazi Germany U-boat commanders did routinely pick up sailors who survived the downing of their vessels by U-boats. they would put them in lifeboats or bring them food, water. They're supposed to, or take them as prisoners or give them directions to where they needed to go. That stopped after something called the Laconia incident in 1942, where basically the German U-boats were doing that. And then an American plane came and bombed the Germans. And so the Germans are like, oh, if you're going to do that, then we're not going to do that anymore. But what are the rules of the sea here? Where does international law have to say? You know, is this a war crime? What is this? I mean, it's gross, but what is this legally?
It's awful. It was not a violation of international law to torpedo the boat. Mm-hmm. They're in international waters. We're in a state of active hostilities. It was a violation.
Are you allowed to go, even though it's thousands of miles away from the war? Does that matter? I mean, could they have done this in the middle of the South Pacific?
Sure. Definitely. Okay. Mm-hmm. What the crime that was committed was not rising to the surface once the Iranian boat was destroyed and rescuing the survivors. We managed to rescue the survivors, and we just sped away. It was only because the Iranians, before the boat sank, were able to get a distress call off that the Sri Lankans came and rescued the handful of survivors. Interesting thing, the Sri Lankans, they made a series of statements yesterday, both the Prime Minister and the Minister of Defense, and they were very, very carefully worded statements. I was very interested to see this, where they said, they went to the extra trouble of saying that we are signatories to the International Maritime Treaty on, you know, waterborne rescues or whatever the heck it's called. And so because we are signatories of this, to this treaty, and we respect the rule of international law, slap at the United States, we sent the Navy out to rescue the survivors. That was what the Americans were supposed to do. The Americans were supposed to rescue the survivors.
Did the Americans know that?
We wrote the treaty. So we wrote it.
What do you think happened here?
I think that we just don't give a shit anymore. I mean, we just ignore treaties that we don't like. This started with George W. Bush, where it was clearly a violation of both domestic and international law to torture prisoners. And we did it anyway. It's the same thing now.
I mean, and well, with that, I mean, I remember, John, you have this is your area of expertise for sure, but I seem to remember there were even arguments before the torture program, like, was known to have actually occurred, like in favor of torture, appearing in the op-ed pages of newspapers like the New York Times. Hey, we should torture. Torture is great.
Oh, yeah.
Remember those?
Absolutely.
I mean, so that was a discussion that happened. And then, you know, we find out. So it seems like as a society, they grease the skids for the torture program, like to, you know, degrade our morals and our adherence to the rule of law. Here, there's been no, I mean, hell, we still haven't heard, we haven't had a speech from the president yet explaining why we're at war at all.
Yeah.
But I mean, in terms of, you know, oh, we're going to ignore this. We're not going to rescue sailors anymore. I mean, that's just sort of, I mean, did the word go out from the Department of the Navy to, hey, don't worry about it. It's cool. Or
I think so. And with Pete Hegseth as the Secretary of Defense, barking the orders from the very top, and having replaced all of the Joint Chiefs of Staff who were not Trump supporters with Trump supporters. Yeah, I think that's the policy.
Crazy. Thanks for the $10 from USXXX A-Rod, USCXXX. You have consistently said that the DOD and government bureaucracy can slow walk presidents and their crazy ideas. Was that analysis wrong? Why are there no adults stepping up and seeing these actions are insane?
No, I don't think the analysis was wrong. I think that the CIA and the rest of the intelligence community actively approves of and supports overthrowing the Iranian government.
Want to support the show with style? Go to deprogram.live and check out our merch. That's deprogram.live, or check out the description below. Thanks for watching.